something that we never get a poke at the folks behind the curtain. So we seeking some relevance, the trivial present tense. A war rages on between commerce and common sense. A brand new track, a monistic theory. I play it loud enough so the whole world could hear me.
One love, one planet, one God, one fam, one music, one dance, one root, one plan.
I live for the lyrics, so I hope you can hear it. The lies won't stop me, you know I don't fear it. They do it for the money while we do it for the spirit. We live in harmony, say cool, let them hear it.
Good morning, everybody. You are listening to WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hardwick, Central Vermont Community Radio, 91.1 FM and 91.7 FM. And this is Amy, and it's Saturday morning, guys. I'm so excited. Welcome back to Amy's Kids Show. We are here every Saturday morning with the chickens, with the dogs, with the ducks, with everybody. I was seeing all kinds of animals on the way here this morning. Central Vermont is enjoying fall. It's so beautiful out there. So thank you for joining me. Let me remind you that community support for Amy's Kids Show is provided in part by Woodbury Mountain Toys, featuring a selection of toys and games for kids of all ages. Located at 24 State Street in Montpelier, Vermont. More information about Woodbury Mountain Toys can be found at woodburymountaintoys.com. Come in and play with us. Oh, and it is so much fun to go in and play in that toy store, I have to tell you. So, guys, we are going to be doing some more playing here today. We have some animals joining us today. We have a rabbit, and we have some interesting creatures we're going to meet on another planet. I know, because, you know, we've been reading A Wrinkle in Time, and we are up to, let's see, which chapter is this? Chapter 10. Chapter 10 out of 12 chapters, and this one is called Absolute Zero. And I'm hoping maybe, you know, I've been doing some thinking, what does Absolute Zero mean? Maybe you can help me figure that out. I've got some ideas. Maybe we'll talk about them later if we have time. Absolute zero. Well, what's zero? Well, that's starting at the beginning again, right? That's starting at nothing and beginning over. And I think that's kind of what's going to happen for Meg. She's going to get a little restart. Press the restart button. Now that we all have to do that sometimes. And she's going to get a big rest. And she's going to get a lot of love and care. And tenderness and compassion from these amazing creatures that her and her dad and Calvin are about to meet on another planet. And these amazing creatures, well, they don't see. They can't see anything. They don't have eyes. They have lots of other, you know, organs. They have extra fingers and extra hands, and so they're extra sensitive, and they definitely know maybe even more about what's going on in the universe than humans with our eyes, you know. So we're going to be learning about how our eyes can sometimes distract us from what's really going on. It's kind of like use the force, right, in Star Wars. So there is a lot of fun, but first we're going to keep celebrating that all-powerful word no. And that other all-powerful two-letter word, us, and we, those two other words, those were our words from last week. We're going to keep celebrating, and then I'll see you for the story in a little bit. Thanks for joining me, guys.
On a misty morning walk, I met a friend. We sat and talked about a place for us. All our words rambled high and low, from the Catskills down to New Mexico. There's a place for us from the Coney Island.
Ride. like in any old day on the farm. Nobody doing nobody no harm. Till out of the hay with the flash and a flurry came a cat named Cooper and a mouse named Murray. Now a cat and a mouse make a funny pair, but Cooper and Murray really didn't care. The world outside held so much more, so they squeezed through a hole in the old barn door.
Twitch that nose, wag that tail, side by side down a crooked old trail. You and I, bet we don't fail, as long as we're together, as long as we're together.
Till they met up with the toad, hopping and bopping by the side of the road.
Here, my friend, is a little advice. Look before you leap or you'll pay the price.
Just around the bend they happened to see wise old owl in a sycamore tree.
My advice, wherever you go, is to ask a lot of questions if you don't know.
Twitch that nose, wag that tail, side by side down a crooked old trail. You and I, bet we don't fail.
They met up with the fox, sunning himself on the canyon rocks.
My advice, if you want to go far, it's best to know who your real friends are.
Mm-hmm. Word about the two was turning into barnyard talk with a whinny and a cackle and a quack.
Everyone agreed with Mr. Goat.
They're not coming back.
Now the last we heard, they went over the hill. For all we know, they're traveling still. Never gonna keep them from the things they learn.
Twitch that nose, wag that tail, side by side down a crooked old trail. You and I, bet we don't fail, as long as we're together, as long as we're together.
Woo!
As long as we're together.
It's okay
to say no.
To say no.
If you don't like what's going on, it's okay.
It's okay
to say no.
To say no
to someone who bothers you by doing something wrong. It's okay.
It's okay
to say no. Something they shouldn't do. Just say no and run away. Run home to safety. Tell what happened to you. It's okay to say no. It's okay.
It's okay
to say no.
To say no
to someone who bothers you by doing something wrong.
It's okay
to say no.
Wait a minute. Watch that rabbit hop. Check out those long ears. But wait, he's got no tail. It's just a powder puff.
Rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. Rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. Tail is barely there at all. There at all. There at all. Tail is barely there at all. It isn't quite enough. Rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. Ears are longer than its tail. Than its tail. Than its tail. Ears are longer than its tail. Just a piece of fluff. Rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. Rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Tail at all. Tail at all. The rabbit's got no tail at all. Just a powder puff.
Welcome back, folks. We've been celebrating rabbits and everything else already this morning on Amy's Kids Show. And, you know, if you think about it, a rabbit is a pretty interesting creature, right? It is interesting that they have hardly any tail. And then their ears are big, right? So they're sort of the opposite of most other animals with tails. And so how amazing that here on this planet we have these amazing creatures that are so different from each other. And so today we're going to we're going to keep reading A Wrinkle in Time. We're up to chapter 10, Absolute Zero, and we're going to meet some creatures on another planet. And if you're just joining me, we've been reading A Wrinkle in Time for over a month now. We're getting towards the end, folks, the climactic ending, and we've been traveling through space with Meg and her little brother Charles Wallace and their friend Calvin. And they've been traveling through space with the help of Mrs. Who, Mrs. What's-It, and Mrs. Witch, who know how to tesser, which is a way to use the tesseract, which is a shape. And they've figured out how to find those wrinkles in time and space through the tesseract and travel. So they're about to meet some very interesting creatures on another planet because Meg's father has just tessered them to get them away from it. Capital I-T, it. And it is a dark force that has taken over another planet called Kamazots. And it's trying to take over Earth, actually, too. So these are some lessons that Meg and her friends need to learn so they can bring them back here to Earth to help us, too. So it all comes back around, folks. But in the meantime, they've taken a little bit of a time out from their struggles with it. And sometimes we have to do that, you know, when we're having a difficult time. It's good to kind of get some space and take a time out. And that's what's going to happen for Meg, especially, because she's had a hard time tessering this last time with her father. And she's sort of got it inside of her. She was fighting it, but it got inside her a little bit. And we're going to see it, you know, changing her a little bit. I mean, she does have faults. We all do. But But this time her faults are going to be a little bit stronger than normal. She's going to be sort of blaming her father for all the problems when really it's not his fault. In fact, he just saved her by tessering her. She doesn't even realize it. And sometimes that happens, right? We don't even realize the gifts that we have, and we don't even realize when people are helping us sometimes. And so these creatures, when they first meet them, they're not sure if they're going to be helpful or not. But they certainly are. They certainly are. And most creatures are good and loving and will help us. And we can help them. And it's great. So back to the story. Where we left off last time on chapter 9 was Meg was trying to fight it. And it says she wasn't holding out. It was getting at her, and she couldn't concentrate, not even on math, and soon she, too, would be absorbed in it. She would be an it. Tesser, sir, she heard Kelvin's voice through the darkness. Tesser! She felt her father grab her by the wrist. There was a terrible jerk that seemed to break every bone in her body. Then the dark nothing of tessering. If tessering with Mrs. What's-It, Mrs. Who, and Mrs. Which had been a strange and fearful experience, it was nothing like tessering with her father. After all, Mrs. Which was experienced at it. And Mr. Murray, how did he know anything about it at all? Meg felt that she was being torn apart by a whirlwind. She was lost in an agony of pain that finally dissolved into darkness and complete unconsciousness. So that's where we left off. Just to catch people up, we are up to chapter 10, Absolute Zero. The first sign of returning consciousness was cold. Then sound. She was aware of voices that seemed to be traveling through her across an Arctic waste. Slowly, the icy sounds cleared, and she realized that the voices belonged to her father and Kelvin. She did not hear Charles Wallace. She tried to open her eyes, but the lids would not move. She tried to sit up, but she could not stir. She struggled to turn over, to move her hands, her feet, but nothing happened. She knew that she had a body, but it was as lifeless as marble. She heard Kelvin's frozen voice. Her heart is beating so slowly. Her father's voice, but it's beating. She's alive. Barely. We couldn't find a heartbeat at all at first. We thought she was dead. Yes. And then we could feel her heart very faintly, the beats very far apart, and then it got stronger. So all we have to do is wait. Her father's words sounded brittle in her ears, as though they were being chipped out of ice. Kelvin said, "Yes, sir, you're right, sir." She wanted to call out to them, "I'm alive, I'm very much alive, only I've been turned into stone." But she could not call out any more than she could move. Kelvin's voice again, "Anyhow, you got her away from it. You got us both away, and we couldn't have gone on holding out. It's so much more powerful and strong than..." "How did we stay out, sir? How did we manage as long as we did?" Her father, "Because it's completely unused to being refused. That's the only reason I could keep from being absorbed, too. No mind has tried to hold out against it for so many thousands of centuries that certain centers have become soft and atrophied through lack of use. If you hadn't come to me when you did, I'm not sure how much longer I would have lasted. I was on the point of giving in." Kelvin, "Oh, no, sir." Her father, "Yes. Nothing seemed important anymore but rest. And of course, it offered me complete rest. I had almost come to the conclusion that I was wrong to fight, and that it was right after all, and everything I believed in most passionately was nothing but a madman's dream. But then you and Meg came to me, broke through my prison, and hope and faith returned." Kelvin, "Sir, why were you on Kamazots at all? Was there a particular reason for going there?" Her father, with a frigid laugh, "Going to Kamazots was a complete accident. I never intended even to leave our own solar system. I was heading for Mars. Tessering is even more complicated than we had expected. Kelvin. Sir, how was it able to get Charles Wallace before it got Meg and me? Her father. From what you've told me, it's because Charles Wallace thought he could deliberately go into it and return. He trusted too much to his own strength. Listen, I think the heartbeat is getting stronger. His words no longer sounded to her quite as frozen. Was it his words that were ice or her ears? Why did she hear only her father and Kelvin? Why didn't Charles Wallace speak? Silence. A long silence. Then Kelvin's voice again. Can't we do anything? Can't we look for help? Do we just have to go on waiting? Her father. We can't leave her, and we must stay together. We must not be afraid to take time. Kelvin. You mean we were? We rushed into things on Kamazots too fast, and Charles Wallace rushed in too fast, and that's why he got caught? Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know enough yet. Time is different on Kamazots, anyhow. Our time, inadequate though it is, at least is straightforward. It may not be even fully one-dimensional, because it can't move back and forth on its line, only ahead, but at least it's consistent in its direction. Time on Kamazot seems to be inverted, turned in on itself. So I have no idea whether I was imprisoned in that column for centuries or only for minutes. Silence for a moment. Then her father's voice again. I think I feel a pulse in her wrist now. Meg could not feel his fingers against her wrist. She could not feel her wrist at all. Her body was still stone. But her mind was beginning to be capable of movement. She tried desperately to make some kind of a sound, a signal to them, but nothing happened. Their voices started again. Kelvin, about your project, sir, were you on it alone? Her father, oh no, there were half a dozen of us working on it, and I dare say a number of others we don't know about. Certainly we weren't the only nation to investigate along that line. It's not really a new idea, but we did try very hard not to let it be known abroad that we were trying to make it practicable. Did you come to Kamazots alone, or were others with you? I came alone. You see, Kelvin, there was no way to try it out ahead with rats or monkeys or dogs, and we had no idea whether it would really work or whether it would be completely bodily disintegration. Playing with time and space is dangerous. But why you, sir? I wasn't the first. We drew straws, and I was second. What happened to the first man? We don't. Look, did her eyelids move? Silence. Then, no, it was only a shadow. But I did blink, Meg tried to tell them. I'm sure I did, and I can hear you. Do something. But there was only another long silence, during which perhaps they were looking at her, watching for another shadow, another flicker. Then she heard her father's voice again, quiet, a little warmer, more like his own voice. We drew straws, and I was second. We know that Hank went. We saw him go. We saw him vanish right in front of the rest of us. He was there, and then he wasn't. We were to wait a year for his return or for some message. We waited. Nothing. Kelvin, his voice cracking. Jeepers, sir! You must have been in a sort of a flap. Her father. Yes, it's a frightening as well as an exciting thing to discover that matter and energy are the same thing. That size is an illusion and that time is a material substance. We can know this, but it's far more than we can understand with our puny little brains. I think you will be able to comprehend far more than I, and Charles Wallace even more than you. Yes, but what happened, please, sir, after the first man? Meg could hear her father sigh. Well, when it was my turn, I went. And here I am, a wiser and a humbler man. I'm sure I haven't been gone 2 years. Now that you've come, I have some hope that I may be able to return in time. One thing I have to tell the others is that we know nothing. Kelvin, what do you mean, sir? Her father, just what I say. We're children playing with dynamite. In our mad rush, we've plunged into this before. With a desperate effort, Meg made a sound. It wasn't a very loud sound, but it was a sound. Mr. Murray stopped. Hush, listen. Meg made a strange croaking noise. She found that she could pull open her eyelids. They felt heavier than marble, but she managed to raise them. Her father and Kelvin were hovering over her. She did not see Charles Wallace. Where was he? She was lying in an open field of what looked like rusty, stubby grass. She blinked slowly and with difficulty. Meg, her father said. Meg, are you all right? Her tongue felt like a stone tongue in her mouth, but she managed to croak. I can't move. Try, Kelvin urged. He sounded now as though he were very angry with her. Wriggle your toes. Wiggle your fingers. I can't. Where's Charles Wallace? Her words were blunted by the stone tongue. Perhaps they could not understand her, for there was no answer. We were knocked out for a minute, too, Kelvin was saying. You'll be all right, Meg. Don't get panicky. He was crouched over her, and though his voice continued to sound cross, he was peering at her with anxious eyes. She knew that she must still have her glasses on because she could see him clearly, his freckles, his stubby black lashes, the bright blue of his eyes. Her father was kneeling on her other side. The round lenses of Mrs. Hu's glasses still blurred his eyes. He took one of her hands and rubbed it in between his. Can you feel my fingers? He sounded quite calm, as though there were nothing extraordinary in having her completely paralyzed. At the quiet of his voice, she felt calmer. Then she saw that there were great drops of sweat standing out on his forehead, and she noticed vaguely that the gentle breeze that touched her cheeks was cool. At first his words had been frozen, and now the wind was mild. Was it icy cold here or warm? Can you feel my fingers? He asked again. Yes, now she could feel a pressure against her wrist, but she could not nod. Where's Charles Wallace? Her words were a little less blurred. Her tongue, her lips were beginning to feel cold and numb, as though she had been given a massive dose of Novocaine at the dentist's. She realized with a start that her body and limbs were cold, that not only was she not warm, she was frozen from head to toe, and it was this that had made her father's words seem like ice, that had paralyzed her. I'm frozen, she said faintly. Kamazots hadn't been this cold, a cold that cut deeper than the wind on the bitterest of winter days at home. She was away from it, but this unexplained iciness was almost as bad. Her father had not saved her. Now she was able to look around a little, and everything she could see was rusty and gray. There were trees edging the field in which she lay, and their leaves were the same brown as the grass. There were plants that might have been flowers, except that they were dull and gray. In contrast to the drabness of color, to the cold that numbed her, the air was filled with a delicate, spring-like fragrance, almost imperceptible as it blew softly across her face. She looked at her father and Kelvin. They were both in their shirt sleeves, and they looked perfectly comfortable. It was she, wrapped in their clothes, who was frozen, too solid to even shiver. "Why am I so cold?" she asked. Where's Charles Wallace? They did not answer. Father, where are we? Mr. Murray looked at her soberly. I don't know, Meg. I don't tesser very well. I must have overshot somehow. We're not on Kamazots. I don't know where we are. I think you're so cold because we went through the black thing, and I thought for a moment it was going to tear you away from me. Is this a dark planet? Slowly her tongue was beginning to thaw. Her words were less blurred. I don't think so, Mr. Murray said. But I know so little about anything that I can't be sure. You shouldn't have tried to tesser then. She had never spoken to her father in this way before. The words seemed hardly to be hers. Kelvin looked at her, shaking his head. It was the only thing to do. At least it got us off Kamazots. Why did we go without Charles Wallace? Did we just leave him there? The words that were not really hers came out cold and accusing. We didn't just leave him, her father said. Remember that the human brain is a very delicate organism, and it can be easily damaged. See, Meg, Kelvin crouched over her, tense and worried. If your father had tried to yank Charles away when he tessered us, and if it had kept grabbing hold of Charles, it might have been too much for him, and we'd have lost him forever. And we had to do something right then. Why? It was taking us. You and I were slipping, and if your father had gone on trying to help us, he wouldn't have been able to hold out much longer either. You told him to tesser, Meg charged Kelvin. There isn't any question of blame, Mr. Murray cut in severely. Can you move yet? All Meg's faults were uppermost in her now, and they were no longer helping her. No! And you'd better take me back to Kamazots and Charles Wallace quickly. You're supposed to be able to help. Disappointment was as dark and corrosive in her as the black thing. The ugly words tumbled from her cold lips, even as she herself could not believe that it was to her father, her beloved father, her longed-for father, that she was talking to in this way. If her tears had not still been frozen, they would have gushed from her eyes. She had found her father, and he had not made everything all right. Everything kept getting worse and worse. If the long search for her father was ended and he wasn't able to overcome all their difficulties, there was nothing to guarantee that it would all come out right in the end. There was nothing left to hope for. She was frozen, and Charles Wallace was being devoured by it, and her omnipotent father was doing nothing. She teetered on the seesaw of love and hate. And the black thing pushed her down into hate. You don't even know where we are, she cried out at her father. We'll never see Mother or the twins again. We don't know where Earth is or even where Kamazots is. We're lost out in space. What are you going to do? She did not realize that she was as much in the power of the black thing as Charles Wallace. Mr. Murray bent over her, massaging her cold fingers. She could not see his face. My daughter, I am not a Mrs. What's-it, a Mrs. Who, or a Mrs. Which. Yes, Kelvin has told me everything he could. I am a human being and a very fallible one. But I agree with Kelvin. We were sent here for something. And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God. To them who are the called according to his purpose. The black thing, Meg cried out at him. Why did you let it almost get me? You've never tessered as well as the rest of us, Kelvin reminded her. It never bothered Charles and me as much as it did you. He shouldn't have taken me then, Meg said, until he learned to do it better. Neither her father nor Kelvin spoke. Her father continued his gentle massage. Her fingers came back to life with tingling pain. You're hurting me. Then you're feeling again, her father said quietly. I'm afraid it is going to hurt, Meg. The piercing pain moved slowly up her arms, began in her toes and legs, She started to cry out against her father when Calvin exclaimed, "Look!" Coming toward them, moving in silence across the brown grass, were three figures. What were they? On Uriel, there had been the magnificent creatures. On Kamazots, the inhabitants had at least resembled people. What were these three strange things that were approaching? They were the same dull gray color as the flowers. If they hadn't walked upright, they would have seemed like animals. They moved directly toward the three human beings. They had four arms and far more than five fingers to each hand. And the fingers were not fingers, but long waving tentacles. They had heads and they had faces, but where the faces of the creatures on Uriel had seemed far more than human faces, these seemed far less. Where the features would normally be, there were several indentations, and in place of ears and hair, there were more tentacles. They were tall, Meg realized as they came closer, far taller than any man. They had no eyes, just soft indentations. Meg's rigid, frozen body tried to shudder with terror, but instead of the shudder, all that came was pain. She moaned. The things stood over them. They appeared to be looking down at them, except that they had no eyes with which to see. Mr. Murray continued to kneel by Meg, massaging her. "He's killed us, bringing us here," Meg thought. "I'll never see Charles Wallace again, or Mother, or the twins." Calvin rose to his feet. He bowed to the beasts as though they could see him. He said, "How do you do, sir? Ma'am? Who are you?" the tallest of the beasts said. His voice was neither hostile nor welcoming, and it came not from the mouth-like indentation in the furry face, but from the waving tentacles. "They'll eat us," Meg thought wildly. "They're making me hurt. My toes, my fingers, I hurt." Calvin answered the beast's question. We're from Earth. I'm not sure how we got here. We've had an accident. Meg, this girl, is paralyzed. She can't move. She's terribly cold. We think that's why she can't move." One of them came up to Meg and squatted down on its huge haunches beside her, and she felt utter loathing and revulsion as it reached out a tentacle to touch her face. But with the tentacle came the same delicate fragrance that moved across her with the breeze, and she felt a soft, tingling warmth go all through her that momentarily assuaged her pain. She felt suddenly sleepy. "I must look as strange to it as it looks to me," she thought drowsily, and then realized with a shock that of course the beast couldn't see her at all. Nevertheless, a reassuring sense of safety flowed through her with the warmth which continued to seep deep into her as the beast touched her. Then it picked her up, cradling her in two of its four arms. Mr. Murray stood up quickly. "What are you doing?" "Taking the child." Chapter 11, Ant Beast. We're going to read just a few pages of this next chapter. "No," Mr. Murray said sharply. "Please, put her down." A sense of amusement seemed to emanate from the beasts. The tallest, who seemed to be the spokesman, said, "We frighten you?" "What are you going to do with us?" Mr. Murray asked. The beast said, "I'm sorry. We communicate better with the other one." He turned toward Calvin. "Who are you?"
"I'm Calvin O'Keefe."
"What's that?"
"I'm a boy, a young man."
"You, too, are afraid?"
"I'm not sure."
"Tell me," the beast said,
what do you suppose you'd do if the three of us suddenly arrived on your home planet? Shoot you, I guess, Kelvin admitted. Then isn't that what we should do with you? Kelvin's freckles seemed to deepen, but he answered quietly, I'd really rather you didn't. I mean, the Earth's my home, and I'd rather be there than anywhere in the world. I mean, the universe, and I can't wait to get back, but we make some awful bloopers there. The smallest beast, the one holding Meg, said, and perhaps they aren't used to visitors from other planets. Used to it? Kelvin exclaimed. We've never had any as far as I know. Why? I don't know. The middle beast, a tremor of trepidation in his words, said, you aren't from a dark planet, are you? No, Kelvin shook his head firmly, though the beast couldn't see him. We're shadowed, but we're fighting the shadow. The beast holding Meg questioned, you three are fighting? Yes, Kelvin answered, now that we know about it. The tall one turned back to Mr. Murray, speaking sternly. You, the oldest man, from where have you come now? Mr. Murray answered steadily. From a planet called Kamazots. There was a mutter from the three beasts. We do not belong there, Mr. Murray said, slowly and distinctly. We were strangers there, as we are here. I was a prisoner there, and these children rescued me. My youngest son, my baby, is still there, trapped in the dark mind of it. Meg tried to twist around in the beast's arms to glare at her father and Kelvin. Why were they being so frank? Weren't they aware of the danger? But again, her anger dissolved as the gentle warmth from the tentacles flowed through her. She realized that she could move her fingers and toes with comparable freedom, and the pain was no longer so acute. We must take this child back with us, the beast holding her said. Meg shouted at her father, don't leave me the way you left Charles. With this burst of terror, a spasm of pain racked her body, and she gasped. Stop fighting, the beast told her. You make it worse. Relax. That's what it said, Meg cried. Father, Kelvin, help! The beast turned toward Kelvin and Mr. Murray. This child is in danger. You must trust us. We have no alternative, Mr. Murray said. Can you save her? I think so. May I stay with her? No, but you will not be far away. We feel that you are hungry, tired, that you would like to bathe and rest. And this little, what is the word? The beast cocked its tentacles at Kelvin. Girl, Kelvin said. This little girl needs prompt and special care. The coldness of the, what is it you call it? The black thing? The black thing, yes. The black thing burns unless it is counteracted properly. The three beasts stood around Meg, and it seemed that they were feeling into her with their softly waving tentacles. The movement of the tentacles was as rhythmic and flowing as the dance of an undersea plant. And lying there, cradled in the four strange arms, Meg, despite herself, felt a sense of security that was deeper than anything she had known since the days when she lay in her mother's arms in the old rocking chair and was sung to sleep. With her father's help, she had been able to resist it. Now she could hold out no longer. She leaned her head against the beast's chest and realized that the gray body was covered with the softest, most delicate fur imaginable, and the fur had the same beautiful odor as the air. I hope I don't smell awful to it, she thought. But then she knew, with a deep sense of comfort, that even if she did smell awful, the beasts would forgive her. As the tall figure cradled her, she could feel the frigid stiffness of her body relaxing against it. This bliss could not come to her from a thing like it. It could give only pain, never relieve it. The beasts must be good. They had to be good. She sighed deeply, like a very small child, and suddenly she was asleep. Well, folks, that's where we're going to leave it for today, but we will continue next week, and in 2 more weeks, we will be finished with the story, and I know you're going to love it. You're going to love the ending. So let's enjoy some restful peace the way that Meg is. I have a couple of lullaby-type songs lined up for us so that we can relax. Sometimes, you know, after we've had a really tough time, it's really important that we take time to rest and heal and relax. So let's do that this morning on this beautiful autumn day here in central Vermont or wherever you happen to be. Enjoy the planet you're on, wherever you happen to be. All right, guys, thanks for joining me.
Like a ship in the harbor, like a mother and child, like a light in the darkness, I'll hold you a while, and we'll rock on the water, I'll cradle like a ship in the harbor, like a daddy and child, like a light in the darkness, I'll hold you a while, and we'll rock on the water, I'll cradle and hold you while angels sing you to mother and child, like a light in the darkness, I'll hold you a while, and we'll rock on the water, I'll cradle you deep, and hold you while angels sing you to soft eyes, quiet eyes, sleepy eyes, good night, soft hair, honey hair, sleepy hair, good night. It's time for a sleepy song for my sleepy one. It's time to be near to you and keep you safe and warm throughout the night. Sweet dreams, quiet dreams, peaceful dreams, good night. Soft eyes, quiet eyes, sleepy eyes, good night. So sail on to distant lands and dance upon the magic of their distant sands. I'll meet you under starlit skies and keep you safe and warm throughout the night. So sail on to distant lands and dance upon the magic of their distant sands. I'll meet you under starlit skies and keep you safe and warm throughout the night.
folks. We have come to the end of Amy's Kids Show today on this beautiful Saturday morning. We've been taking a little nap through those lullaby songs. I don't know if people got a little sleepy. I know I did. I'm ready to go lay down a little bit here. No, I'm just kidding. It's a Saturday, guys, and it's gorgeous out there, and we're going to enjoy the leaves and the fall and everything else, and I hope you're having a good time wherever you happen to be. We read another chapter, and a little bit more than a chapter, from A Wrinkle in Time today, and that's where we left Meg, sleeping gently in Aunt Beast's arms. We're going to get to know Aunt Beast a little bit better next week, or some people up here in in New England might say Aunt Beast. But whether you call her Aunt Beast or Aunt Beast, that's the name that Meg gives to this wonderful creature who is going to take care of her and help her recover from her experiences with it. Because, you know, it has kind of gotten a hold of her, and it's making her feel very fearful and very, like, sort of just hopeless, right? It's all hopeless. She's never going to see her family again, and her father ruined everything. And you know, it's all this blaming other people and things. And sometimes when we get in a funk, when we get in a bad mood, when it gets a hold of us, which can happen to any of us, you know, with it, we might get very negative like that. And that's what I love about this story, is it's so, even though it's not realistic, traveling through space and wrinkling in time, it is realistic because we all kind of go through those things. And Meg is about to learn what we all need to learn, which is the healing part that will make us all feel better and strong again, is that we are lovable. Right? I mean, just as she was falling asleep in Aunt Beast's arms, she was thinking, oh, I hope I don't smell awful to Aunt Beast, she thought. But then she knew with a deep sense of comfort that even if she did smell awful, the beasts would forgive her. And see, that's the message right there, right? As long as she knows that she is lovable no matter what. But she's going to be able to get strong again. She needs a little time out. She needs a little break. And we all need that to recover, to regroup, to be loved, to just, you know, let someone else kind of help us out, you know, having friends. And I just love that they are traveling through the universe and they are meeting new friends. And that's what life is all about, folks. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you make some new friends yourself or do whatever you enjoy doing. Thank you for joining me for Amy's Kids Show, and we'll see you next week. Well, actually, not see you. Actually, not seeing is going to be the theme for next week, so it's kind of funny we ended that way. What would it be like to not see the way Aunt Beast can't see and her friends on that planet don't have eyes? That's what we're going to be thinking about next week. All right, I will hear you then, feel you, smell you? I don't know. We'll see you then.
On a misty morning walk, I met a friend. We sat and talked about a place for us. All our words rambled high and low, from the Catskills down to New Mexico. There's a place for us, from the Coney Island ride out to the California Times. Oh, there's a place for us under a storyteller's tree or on a river bank down in Tennessee.
Thank you once again for tuning to listener-supported WGDR Plainfield, WGDH Hart.